Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange Ask the Expert session. Today's topic is WebSphere Compute Grid. My name is Joseph Lam, and this session will give you the opportunity to speak to our panel of experts on a variety of subjects related to today's topic. Moving on to slide number 2. In today's session, we will start off by introducing our panel of experts to you. We will then move on to give you a brief introduction to WebSphere Compute Grid. Next, our panel of experts will answer questions that were pre-submitted to us through email. Then, we will open the lines for a live Q&A period. And finally, the session will end with a summary of today's webcast. Let's move on to slide number 3. At this time, I would like to introduce our panel of experts for today's call. Our panel consists of Sajan Sekaran, WebSphere Batch Development Lead.
Hi, this is Sajan Sekaran. I'm the a development lead for the WebSphere Batch component and the WebSphere Compute Grid product. I've been working on WebSphere Compute Grid and WebSphere Batch for the last 6 or 7 years, and before that, I have some experience as the development lead for the WebSphere caching component. Thank you.
And hi, this is Chris Vignola. I'm the WebSphere Batch Architect. I'm the chief architect for the WebSphere Compute Grid product and have been so for about as long as Sajan's been around. And we've been working together on this to bring you the product that you are familiar with today.
Thank you, Chris. And then we have Tyla, software engineer.
Hi, this is Ty. I've been a developer and level 3 support for the Compute Grid team for about the last 4 years, and I started working on Compute Grid since version 6. Thank you.
Thank you, Ty. Next, we have Mary Curran, software engineer.
Hi, this is Mary Curran. I have 28 years of experience with IBM, and I've been on the WebSphere Compute Grid team since version 6, along with Ty.
Thank you, Mary. Then, we have Daniel Belina, software engineer.
Hi, this is Daniel Belina. I've been with IBM for a little over 9 years, and I've been on the Compute Grid development team for a little over 1 year.
Thank you, Daniel. And finally, we have Mahesh Reddy, software engineer.
Hi, this is Mahesh Reddy. I have been with IBM for 11 years, and in the past 4 years, I am working in Level 2 support team supporting WebSphere Compute Grid.
Thank you, Mahesh. Now, before we get to the question and answer period, our panel would like to give you an overview of the topic. Moving on to slide number 4, and please go ahead, Mahesh.
Yeah, thank you, Joseph. Today we'll be discussing few topics related to WebSphere Compute Grid. The topics which are pre-submitted by panel of experts, such as batch features in WebSphere application server compared to Compute Grid. And also we'll discuss transaction management with any transaction batch jobs, batch data stream, framework, and patterns, in particular JDBC reader pattern, and to see if you can hold the cursor across the checkpoint cycles or not. The Compute Grid support for mixed mode jobs such as transactional, compute intensive, and native execution job steps. We'll go over how you will run multi-threaded jobs in Compute Grid. We'll also discuss about record processing policy. As we know, the Compute Grid system provides batch-oriented applications. These applications perform record processing similar to more traditional J2E applications, but are driven by batch inputs rather than interactive users. In addition to these questions, we also going to cover some of the questions received by customers via email, and they are like, does WebSphere Compute Grid support various step scheduling criteria? Is it possible to implement parallel job processing using a single instance standalone application server? And also, how do you roll back database updates in a parallel job processing? And finally, we'll discuss, like, if Compute Grid, the technology behind World Community Grid or not. And the overall presentation needs some level of familiarity with the product to fully follow the presentation. Let's move on to the slide number 5. I'm handing over the presentation to Chris Vignola, Batch Architect, to provide a high level of Vsphere Compute Grid, followed by answer to question number 1. So, Chris, it's all yours.
Okay, thank you, Mahesh.
Thank you.
All right. Now, I realize that many of the participants in this session already have experience with Compute Grid and prior knowledge of the product. Nevertheless, to ensure that we are all starting from a consistent point of view, we'll do a brief overview of the product before we launch into the questions. So just a few slides to orient ourselves. Starting from the top, the Vsphere Compute Grid product is a comprehensive solution providing a platform for Java batch processing, and this addresses a multitude of needs. It addresses the need to provide an environment in which batch and online can peacefully coexist together. There's a standardized programming model that aids and facilitates that through a managed runtime that that not only executes the batch jobs, but is also able to facilitate the coordination of batch execution in the presence of online applications. There's support for developers to provide enhanced developer experience to help developers focus on business logic. So there's kind of a separation of concerns. It's inherent in the programming model. It's supported by the tooling that aids in application development. There's caretaking to provide an environment that is efficient and that allows for efficient batch execution. In particular, our story around parallel batch execution is directly aimed at assisting batch applications in decreasing overall elapsed time for processing and making better use of available system resources. And then finally, the facilities necessary to manage a batch workload, whether it's a small workload, medium or large, okay, whether it's a standalone environment or an enterprise batch pod integrated fully into a larger overall ecosystem. We have system management facilities, tools, and operational command and integration points with third-party products that makes it possible to bring the experience of batch processing in WebSphere, you know, as a first-class workload into your environment and be able to manage it in a coherent and robust fashion. And that's really the essence of batch platform, as it goes beyond application programming model and the application itself, which is a bit myopic if you only look that far, to considering the realities that enter in when you have an actual workload, you know, jobs coming and going, SLAs that have to be dealt with, problem determination needs that may crop up. You know, all of these factors enter in and point to the need for management facilities that understand and can help you deal with a batch workload. And that's exactly what Compute Grid brings to the table over and above just the developer experience itself. With that, let's move on to slide 6. Continuing in the spirit of overview, just a reminder that there's a runtime component that supports the execution of a batch job. We refer to that as a batch container. This is built up on top of the standard WebSphere application server infrastructure. So the batch container leverages all that is good in WebSphere, you know, so the security model, transaction model, communication support, the full complement of the server-side Java EE programming model, and other extensions and standards that are delivered in the WebSphere application server, such as the OSGI programming model through the, you know, the Aries Blueprint standard, web service standards, and so forth. At the heart of the batch container is the use of asynchronous beans, okay? And an asynchronous bean ends up being the unit of execution on which a batch job executes. The asynchronous bean, however, is managed by the batch containers. So the batch containers are primitive interfaces of the asynchronous bean to manage the batch jobs, supporting batch application lifecycle, concerning itself with the starting of jobs, the sequencing of steps, management of checkpoints, management of the state of the job, communicating the state of the job to the workload manager of jobs, the job scheduler, okay, and providing a basis for failover and recovery for job processing as well. Okay, so all of this comes together then in the guise of this component we call the batch container to carry out the care and feeding of the batch job as it executes. Move on to slide 7, please. Okay, in this diagram, we've taken the batch container that we looked at on the previous slide, and we've set it off to the right-hand side of the current slide. Front and center in the current slide is the batch scheduler, which is, you can think of it as sort of the traffic cop or the workload manager for the full complement of batch jobs that have been submitted for processing to your execution environment. It is the manager of the workload. Okay. It is responsible for several very important tasks and is part and parcel to what constitutes ComputeGrid as a platform, not merely an environment that understands how to process asynchronous work, but an environment that knows how to manage asynchronous work and expose operational interfaces for the same. The batch scheduler, number one, exposes interfaces to the end user, whether that end user is a human interactive user, whether it is an automaton, an automation agent, okay, whether it's a script, whether it's an application, whether it's an external workload scheduler, like product like Tivoli Workload Scheduler or Control-M as an example, okay? The batch scheduler exposes interfaces that run the gamut from API, both in EJB and web service formats, to a command line interactive console suitable for power users or scripting, to a full-blown web UI for interactive visual interaction, okay, as well as a special connector utility called WS Grid that's designed to interconnect the Webster Compute Grid batch environment with enterprise workload schedulers like TWS, like Control-M, and other products of that category. Okay, so not only does the batch scheduler provide the interfaces through which one can interact with the system, submitting jobs, canceling jobs, and supporting the full range of operational commands that exist for job interaction, such as, I mentioned, cancel, restart, etc., but also it is the dispatcher of workload. Many jobs may come into the batch scheduler. They need to be taken and placed onto other application servers that include the batch container in order for those jobs to be executed. And so the batch scheduler then is the job dispatcher. It is responsible for carrying out a workload management strategy for how to distribute the workload across an array of batch containers if multiple batch containers are available. We do support in ComputeGrid a cluster model for HA and scale, and so the batch scheduler is fully able to take advantage of that. We have several options for how workload management strategies can be carried out. Some of them are built into ComputeGrid. Some of them involve integration with external products or the unique features of certain operating systems such as the ZOS operating system. Okay, to summarize this chart then, slide 7, you'll notice that there's a numeric scheme numbered 1 through 6, which simply depicts the simplified basic flow of a job through the system, starting with submission, it's passing through the batch scheduler and then eventually being dispatched to an endpoint and processed by a batch container. Bullet number 2 is next to a box labeled XJCL. I will point out as a reminder that we use a job control language model for how jobs are described. XJCL is an XML document that is external to the application itself, but it is metadata that describes the sequence of steps that are to be executed in the context of a particular job, as well as defining various other attributes of a job execution, such as the particular inputs and outputs for various steps, potentially symbolic substitution parameters to pass parameters into the job steps and so forth. Okay, so it kind of summarizes the basic model for job submission, dispatching, and execution. And with that, let's move on to slide 8. Okay, a few words about our batch programming model. Okay, there are several different artifact types that come together to comprise a batch job. Okay, the developer is responsible for producing, at a minimum, a job step implementation. Job step is a unit of business logic that exists to carry out a particular appointed function that is meaningful in the context of the overall business task at hand. Okay, so that's the minimal responsibility of the application developer is to produce the business logic. Okay, however, there are other artifacts that come together to comprise full application and job. Okay, the jobs themselves, as I had mentioned in the previous slide, are described through metadata called XJCL. But then, if you break that down and look inside it, what you'll see is a number of things. There's a controller bean, which what we use inside the Webster application servers, there's a runtime EJB that we use by reference from a job definition in order to context switch the correct class loaders for your application. So your application is deployed as a set of POJOs, which implement your batch steps, bundled as an ear file and deployed into WebSphere as ear files are normally deployed. Okay. The batch controller bean is simply a JNDI reference that allows the runtime to switch to the class loader context for your ear file, for your application. Okay. There's no code to write. It's merely a reference. Okay, but our packaging utilities hide that EJB reference away inside of your ear file as you package up your application. And that's sort of some of the magic glue that makes things work. Then additionally in the XJCL, there's job step control, which if you have conditional logic between steps and want to run step 2, if and only if step 1 was successful, there's syntax in the XJCL to accommodate that. Your batch steps typically will consume input data and produce output data. A batch step is not required to process data. It may be purely computational, printing messages to your log or putting messages on queues or other things like that, but typically, most frequently, input and output data is involved. When input and output data is involved, batch data streams are the artifact types that are configured in your XJCL that identify and provide the data logic for accessing that input and output data. Now, batch data streams, there's a set of them that are supplied with the configured product out of the box, ready to use, you know, for access, reading and writing files, reading and writing JDBC, et cetera. You're also free to implement your own custom batch data streams to accommodate needs that are not addressed through the starter set of batch data streams that are supplied with Webster Compute Grid. Likewise, checkpoint algorithms, where checkpointing is done for transactional batch, you want to be able to run the batch and periodically checkpoint so that if you have to ever restart that batch job from either a planned or unplanned interruption, that there's a point from which to resume so that work that has been previously committed is not lost. Okay, so it's a basic checkpoint restart mechanism. The manner that we've dealt with checkpointing is we've placed it outside of the application, so it's under runtime and operational control. Okay, and so with the job, you can configure checkpoint algorithms that describe the policy for when checkpoints are to be taken. You know, maybe after every so many seconds, after so many records, or some custom algorithm. So typically, the developer doesn't have to write checkpoint algorithms. They just need to be configured into the job definition. And then finally, there's provision for handling return code, setting the return code for steps, setting the return code for the overall job. Okay, and all of this comes together to provide a rich set of features for the application programmer to exercise explicit control over every aspect of this. A lot of the artifacts are available out of the box, as I said, a set of batch data streams, checkpoint algorithms. There's a thing called the result algorithm as well. It's available out of the box. But all of those are customizable as well, so that you can produce your own unique versions of those when and if you should need them. I think that's probably enough on batch programming model. So let's move on to slide 9. And that brings us to our first question, which asks, how does the batch feature set in WebSphere application server compare to WebSphere Compute Grid? We point out the reason that one would ask that question is because if you've been watching carefully, you will have noted that with WebSphere version 7, Webster Application Server, version 7, we introduced a feature pack, which is an add-on package, a no-charge add-on package for the application server, a feature pack called the Modern Batch Feature Pack for Webster Application Server version 7. Okay, and what that feature pack delivered was a subset of the Webster Compute Grid functionality. Now, that feature pack got rolled into Webster Application Server version 8. So if you were to compare the batch features of Webster versions of WAS, let me call it WAS, WAS version 7, with the feature pack installed, compared to WAS 8, you would see the same batch features. Okay? And if you look at Webster Compute Grid is a separate product, but it does not stand alone. It is an extender product, sometimes called a stack product, which you install over top of Webster Application Server, specifically over top of Webster Application Server network deployment. And Webster Compute Grid has two versions in the field today, version 6.1.1 and Compute Grid version 8. Okay, and then to answer the question, so, well, all right, you've identified the different offerings, but what's the difference in their capabilities? Let's move to slide 10 to see the answer to that. All right, now this chart's a little bit busy, but let me decode it for you. The columns on the right-hand side with the squares above them, okay, identify three different offerings of Webster Batch, starting with, working from left to right, Webster Application Server by itself and the batch features that are built into it, Webster Application Server network deployment, okay, or WAS for ZOS, okay. So the difference between that is, you know, single machine versus multi-machine when we go to network deployment or ZOS. And then finally, WAS plus Compute Grid. So I won't read the whole diagram to you, but you can look at that on your own time, but let me give you a sense for what it's communicating. Okay, what it's communicating is that as you go to the right with your product offerings, that there's a growing continuum of function, okay, starting from, you know, simple all-in-one batch server with WAS, okay, moving up to network deployment that then introduces HA and failover and other features, moving to full grid compute grid, which adds in just a whole raft load of additional capabilities, including compute grid's worth of support for parallel batch is delivered, a number of enterprise level workload of operational management capabilities, so throttling controls and other things, as well as for the ZOS platform COBOL integration. Okay, so continuum of function, you know, as you add additional capabilities to your environment. And that's the essence of the difference between the WAS batch capabilities and WAS batch supplemented and extended by Webster Compute Grid. And with that, let's move on to slide 11 and our next question, which I'll pass off to my colleague, Sajan.
Thank you, Chris. So question number 2 says, what artifacts of my batch jobs are invoked on a transaction, and then what type of transaction are they invoked on? Let's move to slide 12 to see the answer for question number 2. In Compute Grid version 8, we have made some significant improvement with the transaction management for the transactional batch job step. Anyone familiar with Compute Grid would immediately catch the slight nuance there about transactional batch job step as opposed to transactional batch job. We can get to that later. So basically, in Compute Grid version 8, those transactional batch job steps can be invoked in any one of the three transactional modes. Pretty much all the APIs or the batch artifacts implemented in the application can be invoked either in a global transaction or in a local transaction or in a combination of, some of them in the global and some of them in the local. So you can actually specify for each job, you know, how you want the transactional batch job steps to be invoked on what transaction policy you can invoke them on. You can specify.
global, local, or compact. Starting with, you know, global, all artifacts, you know, whether it's the batch job steps, or batch data streams, checkpoints, or the results algorithms, or the new job listener capabilities that we introduce in Compute Grid Vision 8, they can all be invoked on a global transaction if you set the transaction policy as global. It's straightforward. Same goes for the local as well. Here, all the artifacts, right, so the job steps, batch data streams, all the algorithms and the listeners, right, and each and every single one of those methods can, you know, will be invoked on a local transaction, you know, if you specify the transaction policy as local. We also introduced another mode called Compat, basically for compatibility with the previous versions of Compute Grid. So in the up until Compute Grid 6.1.1, your batch job steps, all the methods in the batch job steps are invoked in a global transaction, and some of the methods in the batch data streams and the results algorithms are invoked in a global transaction, while the checkpoint algorithm and the listeners that were introduced later, you know, were invoked on a local transaction. So if you want the same capability, right, in Compute Grid version 8, you would specify the transaction policy as compact. So that answers question number 2. Let me hand it over to Dan Bellina for question number 3. Could we move to slide 13, please?
Thanks, Sajan. So question 3 states, with the BDS framework's JDBC reader pattern, can I hold the cursor across checkpoint cycles? And there is support within the BDS framework to do that using something called the cursor holdable JDBC reader. Can we move to slide 14 and we'll talk about the answer there? So in general, if we can keep the cursor open across checkpoints, this will make things more efficient. So using this pattern, you can hold the results that open across checkpoints. This sort of conflicts with global transactions, which the batch container uses. As a batch job runs, or while a batch job step runs, the container will take periodic checkpoints. The global train will start, the step will run, then you'll commit to end the checkpoint interval. Using this, you can overcome that and keep the cursor open. There is tooling using the Rad Wizard. Say you can just create a cursor holdable stateful bean, extend and implement the cursor holdable Java artifacts, and that will give you what you need. So basically, this uses a stateful session bean using a TX not supported policy as a wrapper around the cursor axis. This causes the EGB container to switch to local tran mode. And because it's built into the BDS framework, this works for all platforms, databases, and webs for levels. So I'll hand it over to Mahesh now for the next question.
And actually, before we move on, this is Chris speaking, and let me add to Dan's answer. Now, the question that Dan addressed was specific about the batch framework, and his answer addressed the question. But when it comes to the topic of cursor holdability, there are actually a couple of options that exist that are other than the cursor holdable JDBC reader that's delivered in the Compute Grid batch framework. If we think back to what Sajan told us about transaction mode, if you use the local transaction mode, you are able then to directly hold the JDBC cursor in your batch step. Magic there is the fact that you're in local mode, and that's really the issue, because when global transactions commit, any connections that are enlisted in them have their resources closed. Cursor, an open cursor, is an example of such a resource, and that's exactly the reason why, as Dan explained, in the cursor holdable solution, there's some specific magic going on under the covers with an EJB context switch to ensure that access to the connection is done in local mode. So that allows your step to run in global mode, but your reads to be done in local mode. But if your step itself can run in local mode because, well, the only resource you're accessing that's transactional is your database, then you can run in local mode and you can access your database directly. The only thing you've got to pay attention to is that the Compute Grid runtime itself is doing checkpoints to a database, may or may not be the same database that your application is operating on. And so what you really want if you're doing checkpointing is to have the application work checkpointed in the same transactions that the checkpoints managed by the runtime are being checkpointed into, which basically means that you want your application data and your operational data to be in the same database, okay? And you want to share the same connection to that database, which is exposed through an API. I think it's in the JobSep context, if I'm not mistaken, okay? And that sets you up for the basis for doing cursor holding and checkpointing of your work that you do through that cursor, you know, all in local mode, okay? So there are a couple of requirements that you got to conform to there as far as, you know, where the data is at and so forth, but that is another option. And there's a ZOS option, too, which we won't go into in great detail, but it involves Type 2 JDBC on ZOS, which supports cursor holdability in a global transaction directly. So really, in totality, there's three options total when you look at all the options that are available. Starting with Dan's cursor holdable, okay, local mode, okay, if your data is in the same database as your compute grid tables, and then the ZOS option. So, sorry to grab the mic, but I just felt while we're on the topic, it was important to add those things. So, we were passing off to Mahesh, I believe.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. This is Mahesh again. Moving on to slide number 15. The question is, does Vesper Compute Grid support mixed mode jobs? To answer this, move on to slide number 16, please. The answer is yes. Until Compute Grid version 8, a job in Compute Grid or feature pack for modern batch were of a single type. That is, it's a transactional job or a compute intensive or a native execution job style only. You cannot have some steps as a transactional batch and others as a compute intensive. So we have changed that in Compute Grid version 8. In version 8, you can have a mixed transactional batch, compute intensive, or any execution job steps. The runtime uses a controller that is the same for every job, regardless of the type of steps that the job contains. But the controller runs appropriate logic for the step, whether the step is a batch, compute intensive, or native execution step. So these different job steps types can also be run in parallel. So moving on to slide number 17. The next question is answered by Thai. I'm handing over to Thai.
Thank you, Mahesh. All right, so question 5 is asking, how do you run multi-threaded jobs in Web3 Compute Grid version? Let's go to slide number 18, please. In Web3 Compute version 8, we want to mention that the option to run parallel jobs is a function of the batch container. That means that there is no additional system configuration that the customer has to take to use this feature. And for those customers who are familiar with previous version of Compute Grid, you may recall having to install and configure the Parallel Job Manager system application, and those steps have been eliminated in the Web3 Compute version 8. So in version 8, to run the parallel jobs on multiple threads, the first thing is the HGSL must include a run element, and you have to set the instance's property value to multiple, and the JVM property value set to single. So essentially, the XJCL is telling the batch container to run multiple instances of this job and run them in the same server. So this is the optimized mode of running the parallel jobs, where we have the top-level jobs and the sub-jobs running in the same JVM. And since they are running in the same JVM, we optimize or minimize the communication overhead between the top-level jobs and the sub-jobs. This optimized mode is recommended for parallel jobs that are short running. The other alternative of running from a single JVM is to run the parallel jobs across multiple JVMs. And to do this, the XJCL will still have the run element with the instances property set to multiple, but the JVM property will be set to multiple as well. And let's go to slide number 19, please. And I'll hand over the control to Mary.
Thank you, Ty. So question number 6 is, can you explain record processing policy? Let's go on to slide number 20. So skip record processing allows a batch data stream to automatically skip records that encounter read or write exceptions. The user can specify which types of exceptions are skippable and how many skips are permitted. The batch container will handle the skippable exception and discard the record automatically without involvement of the batch application. A message will be logged for each skipped record. The batch application may listen for skipped records by registering a skipped listener. The skipped listener implements the Calm IBM WebSphere batch skipped listener interface and is registered with the batch data stream via the abstract batch data stream record metrics add skip listener method. If a batch data stream encounters an exception that is not in the skippable list, or if it has reached the skip limit, it throws the exception back to the caller. Only batch data streams that inherit from the abstract batch data input stream record metrics or the abstract batch data output stream record metrics support skip record processing. All batch data streams provided by the WebSphere Compute Grid version 8 batch data stream framework inherit from one of these two classes, therefore they all support skip record processing. Skip record processing is enabled by specifying a non-zero value for the COM IBM batch BDS skip count property, which is defined as a batch data stream property in the XJCL. This property specifies the number of records that can be skipped. This is also known as the skip limit. Once the skip limit is reached, no further records are skipped. And each batch data stream has its own skip record policy configuration. In addition to the skip count property, there are also a couple of optional batch data stream properties that can be used to control the behavior of the skip record policy for a particular batch data stream. One of them is the skip include exception. This specifies a list of exceptions that are skippable. If no exceptions are specified, then all exceptions are included in the skippable list. There's also an exclude exception class. This specifies a list of exceptions that are not skippable. If no exceptions are specified, then no exceptions are excluded from the skippable list. In other words, all exceptions are skippable. These two properties are mutually exclusive. Retry step processing allows a job step to automatically restart itself in response to an error. Retry step processing allows the user to configure a job step to automatically restart itself in response to specified step failures that occur under process job step. The retryable exception is initially processed like any other step failure. The checkpoint transaction is rolled back and the job step is destroyed. However, instead of placing the job in restartable state, the batch container automatically restarts the job without any intervention by the user. A message is logged for each retry. Only errors that occur under the process job step can be retried. Errors that occur under create job step or destroy job step are not eligible for retry step processing. Retry step processing is enabled by specifying a non-zero value for the COM IBM batch step retry count property, which is defined as a job step property in the XJCL. This property specifies the maximum number of times a step can be retried. This is also known as the retry limit. Once the retry limit has been reached, no further retries are attempted. This property is a per checkpoint limit. The retry limit applies only to the currently active checkpoint. Once the checkpoint commits, the retry count is reset to zero. Each job step has its own retry step policy configuration. In addition to the step retry count property, there are optional step properties that can be used to control the behavior of the retry step policy for a particular job step. One is the step retry include exception class. This, like the other one, specifies a list of exception classes that are retryable. If no exceptions are specified, then all exceptions are included in retryable list. A second property is the step retry exclude exception class. This specifies a list of exception classes that are not retryable. If no exceptions are specified, then no exceptions are excluded from the retryable list. In other words, all exceptions are retryable. These two properties are, again, mutually exclusive. There is also a batch step retry delay time, which specifies the number of milliseconds to delay before retrying the step. The delay occurs after the checkpoint transaction is rolled back and after the failing step is destroyed, but before the step is restarted and before retry listener on retry is invoked. A batch application can register a retry listener in order to listen for retry attempts and to gain control at various points during the retry process, such as on error or on retry. The retry listener is registered with the job step context via the job step context add retry listener. And let's go ahead on to slide number 21. This is question number 7, and the question is, does WebSphere Compute Grid support various step scheduling criteria? And let's move on to slide 22. The answer basically is no. Job steps can only be processed sequentially today in WebSphere Compute Grid. The steps are processed in the order in which they appear in the job definition in the XJCL. There is, however, the option to skip a step, which can be done through a condition, whereas you, based on the return codes of prior steps, you can decide to skip a step. So based on the return code from job step 1, if it's non-zero, then you can skip step 2. And let's move on to slide 23, and I'll turn control back over to Ty.
Thank you, Mary. So question 8 is stating that, is it possible to implement parallel job processing using a single instance standalone application server? Let's move on to slide number 24, please. All right. So just to remind, the two terms that we use for parallel jobs is we have the multi-threaded steps, which you run multiple instances of a job in a single JVM, and then we have multi-process steps, which to run multiple jobs in multiple JVMs. And parallel jobs are supported in a standalone server mode as well as, you know, the ND mode. And in this case, the multi-threaded parallel job processing is ideal in the standalone mode. Let's move on to slide number 25, please. And I'll hand the control back to Chris.
And so question 9 asks, with regard to parallel job processing, how do you roll back database updates in a parallel job? Let's move to slide 26 to consider the answer. So first of all, it's important to understand that a parallel job is actually a collection of individual jobs that we call subjobs. Each subjob is a clone, essentially, running the same business logic, but typically parameterized to operate on a different set of inputs. And each of those subjobs runs as a full-blown transactional batch job, so that they manage their own checkpoint and restartability. Okay, so they're taking their own checkpoints and their own transactions. Of course, the top-level job that spawned these understands their state, and so when you restart, you're really starting the top-level job, not the individual ones. The runtime takes care of that for you. But with regard to, well, if there is an interruption and, you know, one or more of the subjobs ends prematurely, what about undoing some of their changes, if that's what we wanted to do? And the common way that that's done is in your top-level job, you can implement a synchronization API, which is invoked to do a rollback or a commit, incidentally, okay, after all of the subjobs have been shut down. So basically the flow is parallel job has started, it spawns a bunch of subjobs, subjobs are running, some of them might be ending, but some of them might hit an error, end in the restartable state. That will cause the top-level job then to end any remaining subjobs and then drive the synchronization API, if you've implemented it, to drive rollback, because the top-level job itself is going to end in the restartable state. So let me just give you one, for instance, of how to use it, and then we'll move on. One model is one where subjobs are writing records that have a hidden flag on it, and the record is not visible to other applications until hidden equals false. So they're written with hidden equals true, and then when the top-level job completes and commits, then hidden is changed from true to false, making the records visible, and actually rollback ends up being an opportunity to delete those records that are hidden equals true to basically undo them. You know, other schemes are possible, but the bottom line is it's an opportunity to insert compensation logic to undo the changes made by the subjobs, if the semantics of your application require it. Okay, and with that, then let's move on to question 10. Hand it off to Sajan.
Thanks, Chris. Could we move to slide 27 for question 10? So the question is, actually, this is a very interesting question. Can WebSphere Compute Grid handle changing algorithms, basically changing business logic with changing data, without a true
application update or an install. Or in other words, you can see it as, or can I pass a business logic in the job definition? It's a very interesting question. Well, you might not necessarily see this happen very often with a transactional batch job, but with a compute intensive, I think this might be possible. So let's move to slide 28 to discuss this one. Unfortunately, currently WebSphere Compute Grid currently does not allow you to pass the business logic as part of the job itself. There are some ways this could be done as part of, you know, XJCL itself, but currently Compute Grid does not allow you to pass the business logic. It's an interesting question. It's something that we will consider, you know, when we are developing the future releases of the product. Let's move to slide 29, and I'll pass it back to Chris.
Okay, and a remark on the previous question. It might make sense at some point to be able to pass, like, JavaScript or something in a job. That might be an example of what people might be able to take advantage of, but as Sajan pointed out, at present, there's no capability for that. Question 11, however, poses a completely different kind of question, and it asks, is WebSphere Compute Grid the technology behind the World Community Grid? Let's move to slide 30 to answer that. And the bottom line is, no, it's not the technology behind the World Community Grid. While it is true that WebSphere Compute Grid supports parallel batch processing and can also be used for white space harvesting, you know, using unused CPU cycles when combined with technologies like WebSphere Virtual Enterprise, it is not the technology choice behind the World Community Grid. And in case you're wondering, well, why isn't it? You know, if Compute Grid is such a great product, wouldn't it be used for things like that? It's really not the right tool for the job. Compute Grid has a strong emphasis on business data processing, okay? And if you look at the use of the World Community Grid, it's really more of a, you know, long-running computational kind of tasks that do not have the ACID properties of that are typical to business data processing, you know, the need for checkpoint and restart and data recovery and failover and things like that are not nearly as important in that environment as in the WebSphere Compute Grid. Compute Grid is more of a business processing environment. Traditional HPC-type grids are more better suited for the type of thing that World Community Grid does. So there we have it. With that, we'll move on to our final question, which I'll pass off to Sajan.
Thank you, Chris. Question number 12 states, on endpoint failure, can a batch job be handed over to another endpoint? So it's another interesting question. Let's move to slide 32 to consider the answer. So basically, you know, for a transactional batch job, you can restart the batch job, right, if your job abandons for a reason. And the batch job could also go into a restartable state if the endpoint, the container that's processing or hosting the batch job goes down. So in the case where the endpoint goes down, so the question is, can you restart the batch job automatically on the other available endpoints? Out of the box, Compute Grid does not automatically restart the batch jobs when an endpoint becomes unavailable or when an endpoint crashes. But there are ways in which you could implement automatic restart, job restart mechanism. So the slide here actually talks about a job listener. It should be more of a JMX job listener, right? So basically you can register a listener to the scheduler to receive for notifications about job state changes, and you will receive a notification when a job goes into a restartable state as a result of an endpoint or a server going down. So in that case, you should be able to, communicate back with the scheduler to restart the job. So out of the box, we don't provide a job restart, but there are mechanisms using which you can implement an automatic job restart on failures. That's, I think, concludes the main set of questions. Let's move to slide 32, and I'll hand it back to Joseph.
Thank you to our panel of experts for answering the pre-submitted questions. At this point in time, Kathy, we would like to open the lines for live Q&A period.
We have a question from Pavan Surai. Your line is open.
Hi. I have a question on the files which get generated during the batch processing, like a text file writer, which basically creates a file. And I see that whenever it creates a file, it adds the job name and the job ID as part of the file name. I would like to know how we can turn that off.
Okay, let me repeat the question. This is Sajan, so that we understand the question correctly.
Okay.
So the question was, with the batch data stream framework, if you're using the text file writer,
yeah.
You know, it currently writes out the job name and the job ID, right, as part of the file name.
Yes.
And you would like to understand if there is an option to disable writing out the job name and the job ID.
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah, so Sajan, if I remember right, there's a property for that. The reason it's done that way in the first place is to facilitate parallel processing where you may need unique file names.
Well, John, this is Mary. The property is append job ID to file name.
Okay.
At this time, I show no further questions.
Thank you, Kathy. And thank you, everyone, for your participation in the live Q&A period. At this point in time, I would like to move on to slide number 35 and pass the presentation to Mahesh for a summary of today's webcast.
Thank you, Joseph. We have discussed a few topics related to Vsphere Compute Grid, which explains some of the benefits of Compute Grid components, transactions, batch data streams, mixed mode, and multi-threaded jobs. Compute Grid supports various step scheduling criteria and how do you roll back database updates in a parallel job processing, and so on and so forth. Hope this information is useful in your day-to-day business. And if you have any questions, we'll be happy to address via Compute Grid forum or via email as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mahesh, for a great summary. At this point in time, we will conclude the Ask the Expert session.